Hey everyone, well, welcome to Stutter Talk, episode 376 for November 28th, 2012. I am your host, or one of your hosts, Peter Reitzis, and I'd like to welcome to the show a well-loved voice at Stutter Talk, Roisin McManus. How are you today, Roisin?
I'm good, and thank you for asking me on to speak with you.
Well, now that you're a Stutter Talk B-team host, which you've been for well over a year, has it been 2 years? I don't really get this chance and anymore. It's great that I can get you on Stutter Talk all to myself. Don't have to share you with Joel and Karen. Roisin McManus, as most listeners know, hosts the Stutter Talk B-team with Joel Cordy and Karen Herring. Roisin is a person who stutters, co-leader of the Brooklyn College National Stuttering Association chapter, and works as a registered nurse at NYU Langone Medical Center in Manhattan. And Ms. McManus wrote the chapter Standing in the Rain in the first Stutter Talk book titled Stuttering, Inspiring Stories and Professional Wisdom. Go to stuttertalk.com for more information about this book. Roisin, how's the feedback been to your wonderful chapter?
It's been incredibly supportive and positive. I've had many people surprise me by sharing that they ordered the book after seeing it on Facebook, and people have had very emotional and positive things to share with me after reading it. Well, it's been like overwhelming, actually.
Yeah, it was really cool to see you posted the book on your Facebook page, and just the responses of support and admiration and excitement. It's really special to see that. I just must feel pretty good to have friends and family like that.
Yeah, it does. And a lot of the people that responded were people that I'm not necessarily really close to now, and I haven't spoken to a number of them about stuttering. So that was even more, that felt even better, actually.
Yeah, it's one of the cool things about talking about stuttering is we're always able to expand the people around us who know about stuttering and to help them understand it better.
Yeah, yeah.
So I recently spoke to a graduate class on stuttering, what some people call fluency disorders, at the University of North Carolina. And before speaking to the class, I read your chapter. Something I always do before I speak is I read something from Letting Go, the newsletter of the National Stuttering Association, or the Friends new newsletter, or I pop over to the Stuttering homepage. I always like to read stories from fellow stutterers before I speak to future speech therapists. And this time I was able to pull the brand new Stutter Talk book off the shelf. And your story really inspires me. It's just... You put it all out there, the challenges, the journey, the continuing journey, the triumph. So I'm really excited to talk to you today. Mm-hmm. So would you mind opening with a reading? And it'd be great if you could read on page 69 of the paperback, starting the paragraph with the words, reading aloud in class.
Sure. One, just a second. I'll flip it open.
And I'll cut this out. Or maybe I won't. We'll see.
Reading aloud in class was like staying in town while a hurricane thrashes ashore. When I managed to sound like my classmates, I would feel euphoric. I had outsmarted disaster. But when the storm hit head on, my voice would be choppy and breathless, my words broken and unintelligible. Focusing on avoiding everyone's eyes during the humiliating silence that followed, I would immediately begin thinking of a way out for the next time. Flee to the bathroom before your turn. Pretend you lost your voice, misbehave and distract everyone. So stuttering devastated me. And I learned to always have one eye to the sky, scanning for the danger and plotting my escape. Through interactions with my parents, teachers, and well-meaning strangers, I became acutely aware that the way I spoke needed fixing. Some people went so far as to tell me exactly how my stuttering would be cured. Slow down. Go to speech therapy. My husband grew out of it. Tap your foot so there is a rhythm. Slow down. I was in and out of speech therapy between the ages of 10 and 16. Grateful for the opportunity to placate my parents, but always painfully aware that no real progress was being made. I practiced reading slowly and loosening my articulators, but never spoke about how I coped as a child who stutters or what I was afraid of. Therapy was on the therapist's terms because I did not know my mind yet.
Thank you for reading that. It's really powerful. There's just so many places to jump in. I was really struck by how you expressed feeling broken. Do you think that's something you felt before people tried to help you, or you really think that a big part of feeling broken was the interactions and people trying to help you or talk to you about stuttering?
I think that the feeling of being broken, or like in my experience, it was really tied in with feeling just like kind of tossed around, was really connected to the physical struggle of stuttering, and not as a child, not exactly understanding why it was so physically difficult. And then at the same time, I'm sure it was also seeing strange reactions to that.
Now, looking in there's many reasons why your story is important to me. One of the things I kept thinking about was, well, I just reread your story before we went on air, and I'm working with some young children. I'm working with a young girl who stutters. She's in the first grade, and she has tremendous shame about her stuttering. So I sort of imagined that the story you're telling now may be her story someday. I fear it's going that way, and she's somebody who came into me pulling her sweater over her mouth when she talks. And I feel like I'm the guy who gets stuttering, and I feel like I'm the guy who she should be working with, but nonetheless, she's still coming to speech therapy, covering her mouth when she talks, and the way she presents herself is she doesn't want me to talk to her about stuttering. She doesn't want to work on the stuttering, whether it's alone or with another child who stutters or in a group. So I'm getting the feeling she feels a little broken, like she needs to be fixed, and I don't want to be a negative part of that. So I just threw a lot on the table. Please take it where you will, Roisin.
Yeah, I mean, that really, thinking about how I felt in that therapy as a kid, I think that I was a lot more aware of how my stuttering was perceived than my parents and my therapist gave me credit for. And I think that very, very young children can read into people's reactions and know that, like, people around them are either frustrated for them, scared for them, or ashamed of them. And when you can tell that, as a child, if you can pick up on that, then like being open about stuttering and allowing yourself to tell adults or friends how hard it is, or kind of letting help in, for me was really, really hard, because it kind of opened up a door for more negative reactions from people.
So if I could just pursue that for a second. So, so for letting the help in, are you saying that by at that young age when somebody was trying to work with you on your stuttering or talk to you about stuttering, I mean, it sounds like it was pretty negative for you. Would there have been a way where it could have been positive? Where, I mean, do you think somebody would have been able to get through to you or to help you in a way that would have been productive?
I'm not sure. I've thought about that a lot. And thinking about this young girl that you're working with, I can't think of a sure way that to make a child feel completely accepted if they're in the therapy to change how they're talking. I think that, like, for me personally, I was just so confused about what was going on with me that, like, I don't think I had the maturity for someone to reach me.
Yeah, no, that makes total sense. And I try to stay away from saying things like this, but I felt the same way growing up. People did try to reach me, not often enough, but it certainly happened, even actually most notably when I was much older in college, and I rejected the help rather fiercely. And in fact, it sounded like you did too a bit when I read through your chapter. And you know, you pointed out something else that, I mean, there's so many valuable, amazing things that you wrote in your chapter, and something that really stuck out to me, and I have to summarize it, was that you put on a stoic or brave face to your stuttering, even though you might not have felt that way. Why did you do that? Or can you explain that to us?
Yeah. I felt like if I... And I actually had this experience a couple of times that if I opened up and kind of let it all bare, people's responses were usually along the lines of, then why don't you work harder to change it? And that response was a really hurtful, even the possibility of getting that response was just too scary for me to open up about it. And I just think that people around me didn't have the resources to understand what was going on with me.
I really liked how you just said that they didn't have the resources to understand. And that's great. And of course, that's why we do Stutter Talk. And we've heard from a bunch of parents, some parents who listen to the Beat Team, that hearing other people talk about stuttering helps them understand their own children, children who are your age and older. Let's stick with your younger days for just a minute. And I want to ask you to read a part from your chapter that I thought was very moving. And I was a bit hesitant to ask you to read it because I think it might be an emotional. Well, it was an emotional part for me to read. Could you read the section starting on page 70 of the paperback, starting with, I remember sitting in a meeting with my therapist.
I remember sitting in a meeting with my therapist and my father. when I was in elementary school. It had been called because I was stuttering more than usual at home. Why do you think that this is happening, Roisin? Usually boisterous and opinionated, I was small and silent. I was used to the timeout chair or the parent-teacher meeting called for mischief in class. But I was now in a different kind of trouble. My eyes welled up, and though there were no words, my throat tightened. Feeling reprimanded for something I never chose, I was at a loss for how to respond. So I looked up and said, "I can practice more. I know my stuttering has gotten worse, but I can practice more." The meeting ended with a heavy silence. To me, the message from two adults that I trusted was clear. My stuttering was not just serious. It was seriously bad. I walked out betrayed, feeling more determined than ever to hide my stuttering. Shortly thereafter, I stopped going to speech therapy.
Thank you for reading that section. It really sounds like growing up, you either felt or there was a lot of pressure put on you that stuttering is somehow your fault or your problem or something you can overcome. Have you ever spoken to your parents about that, or when they read your chapter, did they have any thoughts on that?
I have spoken to them about it, but I think that they didn't exactly understand my experience until reading the whole chapter. And my dad, in particular, who was the person at this meeting, that has spoken about having a completely different experience than I remember. All the phrases and the words and the circumstances of our two stories align. But he remembers feeling like it was just a small meeting and I was fine. Where I remembered that day as it was yesterday. And it just to me kind of shows the enormous gap between the lived experience of stuttering and what people pick up on.
I just couldn't agree more. It's been a theme of recent Stutter Talk episodes. In fact, a recent title of an episode with Bob Quisel was valuing the speaker's experience of stuttering. And it is amazing how our experience as stutterers can just be so different from the people who are in the chair next to us.
Yeah. And I've thought about that a lot in terms of that therapy for children and teens, that children and teens don't necessarily have the empowerment to own their own experience and then communicate it, but that there like that the how can I phrase this, that aspect is so important to productive that therapy. So I can imagine that like working with kids who stutter is just like such a complicated and hard thing to do effectively.
Yeah, it's challenging. I've never been afraid of working with children who stutter, but very recently, perhaps especially now since I have my own children, I do worry that I don't want to be somehow in the negative column in a child's life. Like, even with my best intentions, I don't want to be somebody who contributes to a child feeling broken. I sure hope I'm not, but I'd rather question it continuously than be that person. Because I don't want to be the person in the chair next to you, the adult, who's not really understanding how deeply difficult this is. Well, I mean, I do understand how deeply difficult it is, but there's so many places to go. I mean, the whole thing you mentioned about being stoic, and I don't think that was your word, but that's how I understood. I was trying to put on a brave face. And you know, I have students who stutter all the time and they speak a lot in class. And but they also demonstrate a lot of shame. So putting that all together, I mean, we want our kids who stutter to talk all the time in class. But trying to help, I mean, that's sort of it's a challenge for me. I know that even though they're talking a lot in class, if they're talking with their hand over their mouth, you try to talk to them about it and they pull back and they demonstrate even greater shame or more shame. It's really tough iceberg to melt. Sorry to throw my baggage on you. It's just your chapters got me thinking this week. And of course, this is Stutter Talk. Peter writes us here with B-Team Stutter Talk host Roisin McManus. To join the conversation, go to stuttertalk.com, click on Join the Conversation, which will take you to the Stutter Talk podcast Facebook page, which is the easiest and I think best way to have conversations online. So, Roisin, in your chapter, you talk about taking the subway to your first National Stuttering Association meeting. The first time you were going to meet other people who stutter. And I have that experience of taking the subway and seeing, oh, we're getting closer. We're eight stops away. All right, I still got a buffer. All right, we're three stops away. I'm in trouble. I'm really going to do this, right? did you have a similar experience?
Exactly.
Yeah. You hear the chime, the bell of the doors opening, and you just get
like, here it is.
you're like approaching voluntarily your own torturer. Actually, I'll just say to you, I've said it before on air that I was really scared because I had the worst stereotypes of stutterers in my mind. That basically I would be in a room of stutterers and they would be uncool. Not attractive. I don't mean just physically, but not the type of people I'd want to get a beer with and hang out with. What were your apprehensions about going to that first meeting?
I think that I thought that I would go and people there would be so far ahead of me and like kind of think I was so sad. Which is strange. I mean, I had a similar thing. Like, I remember when I was 16 or 17, I wanted to go back into therapy. And I wanted to call I was just so desperate for anybody to help me. And I wanted to call my old speech therapist. But I was terrified of, like, talking to her and her hearing how, quote unquote, bad I had gotten. So I literally put off calling her for about a year and a half with that exact phone call in mind. Just her like being, oh my God, this girl is so just so far gone or so, you know, having a really hard time. So I think that going to my first meeting, I was more just scared that people there would kind of be more evolved than I was.
Wow, so you already knew that self-help would probably be a valuable thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I assume that was from websites and books. I mean, you said in your chapter that it feels like everybody says you have to go to a self-help meeting. Yeah, that shows our age difference, because I didn't have the right. internet. I had one speech therapist who I had to take his word for it.
So that's even braver of you.
Thank you. But I think it's really cool that we always complain about how awful so many stuttering websites are, but the fact that you can go on, and I'm assuming you went to the stuttering homepage and the Stuttering Foundation of America, and you just kept reading about the importance of self-help. I'm going to guess you read Advice to Those Who Stutter.
I read Self-Help for the Stutterer or something.
Yeah, like that. Yeah. Another great Stuttering Foundation book. So that's just amazing to me that the internet can help people who stutter in that way. Because going in, I did not know that self-help was valuable. So I'm glad. I mean, I had one person's word for it, but anyway. So you're younger than me.
How long did it take to convince you that it was helpful?
Well, I can't say I remember exactly. I'm pretty sure. I always say for going to self-help and trying voluntary stuttering, it took me about a year. I was really reluctant to, and I've said it before on the show, Phil Schneider drove from the Bronx to my apartment in Manhattan on the West Side, picked me up, and he said, "You're going." I don't think I would have gone. And, you know, it's true. Like, he knew something I didn't, and he's certainly not a pushy guy, but he knew me long enough and he worked with me long enough. He said, "You need to do this." And he went with me. And, you know, that's my model of a dedicated therapist. You know, like, he went the extra yard. He went a lot of extra yards. Really changed my life. So, okay, so you get off the train, you find the conference room, and I'm pretty sure the person facilitating the meeting was a former Stutter Talk host, Eric Jackson, right? So what was that experience like? You know, Stutter Talk listeners know that Eric's very outgoing and open about his stuttering. What was that like to, well, describe that to us.
So the first time I went, it was a pretty large group. It was probably about 30 people or so in a huge circle. And Eric was just kind of commanding all of it and stuttering a lot. Talking about stuttering a lot, obviously. And I just kind of sat back and soaked it up. I don't think I really participated very much. But I remember walking away feeling just kind of blown open, or something in me had been like blown apart. Not in a necessarily negative or positive way. It was just like a really big shift. And I just knew that I had to at some point come back.
And I mean, did you start attending regularly?
No, actually, I think I took about I probably that was in the fall, and I don't think I started coming regularly until maybe February or March.
So what do you think the hesitation was?
I think that it was just a lot for me, and that it was, at the time, I was also trying to find a speech that the therapist, and not having very much success with that, and it just felt like I was tapping into various things to find some kind of relief. And it just wasn't something that I could jump headfirst into.
I'm going to read just something short from your chapter. This was about the time that we're talking about now. quote, over a span of 2 weeks, I met with no fewer than 3 therapists who specialized in stuttering. I walked away from all 3 knowing I would not return. I sort of cheered when I read that because I thought, and I think you're very wise to have done this, you sort of treated speech therapy like dating. Like, no, this isn't, I mean, is that fair?
Yeah, it is fair, actually.
But No, please.
That actually is fair because meeting all 3 of the therapists that I met with, there was no like glaring thing that said, this is not the person for you. It just, with 2 of them, I met them 1 time. The 3rd one, I sort of glazed over, but I met with her about 3 times. And I just sort of walked away from all of them, just having like this feeling like, like the chemistry isn't really there. And I knew that I needed, I'm not someone that's necessarily, well, I'm not even going to say that, but I just knew that I really needed to work with someone that would, that I would really connect with in order to make any progress.
So, I mean, it's then it doesn't surprise you when you hear folks on Stutter Talk talking about the importance of the relationship between the client and the therapist. It really sounds like that's what you're saying is so powerful.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm going to read something else that you wrote. You wrote, quote, I found a sensitive and skilled speech therapist and spent the majority of our session simply unloading all of the fear and the shame that had gone unspoken in my life prior to this. And that's so powerful on many levels. But the last few weeks on Stutter Talk, we've been talking about this idea that always keeps coming up in speech therapy, you know, decade after decade, that the primary focus should be fluency and stuttering. And, you know, some people go as far to say we should focus on that because we can measure it with some degree of accuracy. But for you, you're not saying that at all. You're really saying you needed to talk about it.
Yeah. The therapist that I met with when I first saw her, I think that I pretty much told her that like I was just drowning emotionally. And she just really listened. And she didn't hear that and say, well, we'll talk about that and then we'll work on this. She really said, then we're going to focus on that. And it was really, really helpful. I mean, it's interesting thinking about measuring outcomes because, I mean, I'm not a speech therapist, so I can't speak that in depth about it. But the therapy program that I did, the intensive program, there's probably no way for them to report how much they changed my life. Unless, you know, they could have a paper that said, and then she went to nursing school and graduated and got a job, and then she's on Stutter Talk and she runs a support group, and that doesn't really count. Quantitatively.
Yeah. I'm excited to tell you. I'm so sorry to interrupt you, but I've been corresponding with Walter Manning, and Walter Manning with several colleagues, one of them from the American Institute of Stuttering, they just published a study, I think in 2011, and I believe the subjects in the study are all from the program you went through at the American Institute. And they're looking at, I really have to summarize it here because I have to review the study much more closely, but it's an origin and pawn study, and they're really trying to measure how much control a person who stutters feels they have over their life. So instead of the classic one I always talk about is instead of stuttering happening to me, and it's just random, as opposed to this is something I can change. And they're so I'm looking forward to having Walter Manning come on the show sometime soon to talk about ways to measure the very success that you're talking about.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I cut you off. I'm sorry.
Yeah. No, but the interesting, something about that kind of, because I still, and this sort of speaks to a lot of it's in my chapter, but I mean, I don't,
claim that I think I can change my stuttering, but like to be comfort for me, like how I've succeeded and how therapy helped me was kind of to find a way to be comfortable with not always having control, and kind of live without always having control over my speech. Yeah, which is even harder to measure.
Well, right, and it really from your that's exactly right. Your chapter, you're not talking about how speech tools changed your life. In fact, I don't recall any positive comments at all about speech tools. Have speech tools helped you at all?
They've definitely helped me at times. I don't think they've helped me to stutter less. They've helped me, like, the process of going through all of them and learning fluency shaping, learning stuttering mod, learning all of those things. I'm sure not only have I kind of just sort of integrated a lot of them into how I speak, but I believe that I had to process all of those to kind of understand how I would cope with this.
This is Stutter Talk. Peter Wrights is here with Roisin McManus, author of Standing in the Rain, her wonderful new chapter in the Stutter Talk book, Stuttering Inspiring Stories and Professional Wisdom. Go to stuttertalk.com for all the links. Take you to the book at Amazon, Kindle, Smashwords for most ebook readers. It's really on most platforms as far as I can tell. So would you read on page 75 of the paperback, you touch upon speech tools a bit. Could you read the paragraph that starts with over the past 3 years?
Sure. Over the past 3 years, I have acquired the various behavioral and speaking strategies to manage my stuttering. I find myself letting go of the ones that call for a different and unnatural way of speaking. I have looked to those tools to help me feel confident and in control, but they don't do that. I do not feel confident when I focus on reducing the frequency of my stuttering, because I inevitably grow desperate for further reduction. I do not feel in control when I'm constantly reminding myself to slow down. I feel controlled. Maybe I am stubborn, but maybe there are more important things for me to lend my energy to.
I liked, you just worded that beautifully. You wrote, I inevitably grow desperate for the reduction. It's so interesting. So when you were working on stuttering less or stuttering more easily or fluency, you found yourself sort of chasing that fluency god.
Yeah.
Even though the program you went through also very much, had you working on voluntary stuttering and going out on the subway and talking to strangers about stuttering. It's very interesting that even though it's set up as it's okay to stutter, we want you to stutter, you still felt that working on fluency was sort of dragging you back into a bad place.
Yeah. And I know now, after speaking to so many people about it, that like that's a very unique reaction that every person feels did differently. But I really felt like I had spent so much time dealing with with the insinuation or the direct opinion that I can and should change how I speak. And I just felt like I didn't want to even take that on at all anymore. And I don't think that's immature to resist that. And I've kind of gone back and forth on that and had a lot of people tell me different things. But to me, I had and still have a really hard time separating the voice in my head that tells me that I can work on it and practice and stutter more easily and feel more comfortable from the voice that tells me that I should avoid stuttering at all costs. It's really hard to tease those apart for me.
Yeah, this stuff is such juicy stuff because stuttering is just so very complicated and different for us all. You wrote earlier in the book, you ended a paragraph by saying, "One day I looked around and realized that I was not scanning the sky for clouds as often," meaning you weren't scanning for stuttering as often. But I mean, it sounds like some people like me will say, the more I stuttered openly and on purpose, the less I stuttered. But it sounds like you're saying the more that you stuttered on purpose or talk about stuttering, you're not necessarily stuttering less, but you certainly feel better about yourself. Is that fair?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I've never felt like I've never thought that accepting my stuttering was a way to stutter less. But I've always known, well, I haven't always known, but I've learned that accepting my stuttering and kind of being open with it and comfortable with how I naturally speak will kind of free up my life. And it has, but like that's kind of as far as it goes.
Sure. Let me do a dangerous thing here. Can I share with you the listener's experience of your stuttering? Is that okay?
Oh, sure.
So I've known you
this is a little scary.
Well, it is because, you know, there's no matter what I say, I'm sort of going to be jerky because, you know, we always talk about valuing the speaker's experience, and I'm going to share with you my experience of your stuttering. So it's a 0-0 for me. But in the sake of stutter talk and journalism, I'm going to ask you the question. So knowing you for the years I've known you, my general impression is that over the years, you are blocking for shorter periods of time. It's just my gut feeling that you're communicating more easily. And that's just my listener's experience. Do you think that's crazy? Do you feel the same way? Or how would you say it?
Speaking is definitely easier now than it was in the past. And I think that feeling comfortable stuttering makes it easier to kind of move through it. So I would think that would probably make sense. Yeah.
And you're not going to curse my name later after the show.
No. Anything like that? Okay. You said I'm stuttering less.
Well, did I say stuttering less?
No.
Okay, good. Because I was trying to be super, super careful. Okay, so let me ask you, if you don't mind, one last question. You started the book by saying that when I was 20 years old and my life was then that your life was threatening to become painful and narrow. And you've really shared with us how your life was narrowing. How has your life opened up? Like, what are you doing now as a registered nurse and as a person that you sort of never imagined you might do?
Yeah. A lot of things. I think the kind of the main thing when I read the chat chapter and kind of delve back into the painful experiences that I had is that I don't think about stuttering when I think about jobs that I want to apply for or grad schools I want to go to. It's not a major factor in my life path. And that is a massive change for me. Yeah.
Wow. So you're doing what you want to do and you're not really letting stuttering anchor you down.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, very last thing I'm going to mention. I have a horrible habit of asking two last questions. You basically said that, you know, your chapter's not meant to have a happy ending. This is just your story. Do you have any idea of what the next step in the journey is?
I think that I say that in the sense that that stuttering is still a challenge, and I know that it will become a bit bigger one, and that and a smaller one, and then bigger again. So I'm not sure that I know the next step, but I know that my relationship with stuttering is probably going to be a long one.
Roisin McManus, author of Standing in the Rain and the new Stutter Talk book and a Stutter Talk B-Team host, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me on the show. Bye, Peter.
Bye. I stutter on pie too. Bye bye, Roisin.